Carrot Camp is a little over 3 weeks away. I'm so pumped about it from the time that I'm recording this. And my guest today, Edward Beck, who's actually a returning guest, and you're going to get to re-meet him if you've listened to the previous episode with Edward from El Paso, Texas. Now he's crushing it with the web, and also just he has a great mindset around business and real estate on the ethical side of investing. But Edward's going to be coming up to Carrot Camp, so I'm pumped to meet him in person. We've talked many times on the phone. I'm so excited about the way he's growing his real estate business, the way he's really investing and helping other investors do the same thing. So pumped to hang out with him for 3 days. And if you're interested in Carrot Camp and you want to get on the waiting list for future Carrot Camp additions, go to carrotcamp.com and check it out. Depending on when you're listening to this, we're going to be having several Carrot Camps a year. Go over there and you're going to be able to listen. You're going to be able to see when the next ones are potentially and join them or get on the waiting list, which I'll be pumped. All right, Carrot Camp. So Edward does, you know, 5, 7, 8, 9, 10 deals a month. He's going to talk about his deal volume in here. He's going to talk about his marketing mix, what he switched, and his new book. Edward, I'm so proud, man, that you wrote a book. I went through it during the manuscript process, and it's a great, great book, guys and gals. We're going to introduce that to you as well. And yeah, let's welcome Edward Beck back into the CarrotCast as a re-guest. Is that even a word, a re-guest? A re-guest. He's a re-guest. Repeat guest. Edward Beck. All right. Hey, guys and gals. Welcome to the CarrotCast. I've got a repeat visitor, repeat guest on the CarrotCast. We don't have too many of those. I think there's only like a couple. Mike Michalowicz, one of my favorite authors, repeat guest. Adrian, of course, a repeat guest. And now Edward Beck, a Carrot client out of El Paso, Texas, who's just doing really well. And now an author, which we're going to talk about that too. So, Edward, welcome back to the CarrotCast, man. Happy to have you.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, dude. So we were talking a little bit before this about, you know, all that's changed in your business and just life. Since the last time we talked, there's some health and fitness stuff that has changed, which is sweet. Yes. I kind of want to touch on that a little bit because I'm going through my own version of a struggle there. There's business stuff where you're, you know, forming new businesses and bringing partners on. And there's also, of course, your book and then, of course, your real estate business, which we're going to talk a lot about that. But, dude, how have the past 6 months been in your life? And kind of what are some highlights? And even, dude, touch on some of the lowlights. What struggles have you had just since we did the last episode?
Man, you know, the market is great. It's definitely competitive. I think as everybody else in the business is finding out that the market is just getting more and more competitive, mm-hmm. that you're having to really set yourself apart. And that's what I like a lot about your teachings is it goes into, you know, branding yourself and talking about getting behind the number. You know, I've been doing it for a long time, so, you know, I was a number. You know, you always wanted this good vanity number, and that, you know, you knew each other by your numbers, like the other wholesaler. Oh, that's the, you know, the last four numbers of his phone number, and you know him by his number, and it's kind of funny, but there's a lot of truth that came out to that. So I think as an investor, you know, trying to achieve what you want to achieve or gain market share in your area, that a lot of the things that Carrot's been teaching has helped dramatically, and not necessarily just on SEO side, also just in who you are as a company and how you're presenting yourself to the city, you know. So for sure,
dude, it's such a big deal. You know, we've talked on the CarrotCast, we've talked us together, we've talked on other coaching things about your credibility score, how to bump up your credibility. And as people are looking at their options, how do you guide them toward you? And I want to talk a little bit about that. And we'll talk about, of course, digging into your marketing mix and things like that. But, dude, one thing I want to toss out there right at the beginning is this. And this is one of the reasons I want to get you back on the CarrotCast. And you wrote a book, and it's something I think a lot of us have. So a lot of us have some sort of an aspiration or an item on their life list to write a book, right? Man, I know I do. If you go to my blog, trevormock.com, I have my life list published there. We just did a podcast on life lists and the importance of publishing one a couple episodes ago. And on there is write a book. And I think I know I pressure myself into thinking I've got to, oh man, when I do this or when I do that, then I'll write a book. Mm-hmm. But it's so cool that you wrote this book. It's called Get Rich But Not Quick, The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly of Real Estate Investment. And as you were going through writing the book, you were sending me the drafts and I was reading it, giving feedback and this is a great book. And this is something I wanted to get you back on here so we could get everyone who is in the beginning stages of their real estate journey, to read this book, to go buy this book, when it's out. But anyway, dude, what was the inspiration behind the book and how was the process writing it for you?
Man, I've been in the business for a long time and I'm kind of an old school investor, so to speak. So I'm more locally based. I'm not doing any out of town things. And I've seen so many of these other different people come out with different programs and none of them are really talking to me about like the real day-to-day life and the struggle of the industry. They paint this false picture of what the market really looks like and what the business really looks like. And hence the idea, you know, that this they make it like a get rich quick scheme, and it's not. You can get rich and possibly quick, but the odds are highly against that. And to get into the business thinking that that's what you're going to do, you're getting in for the wrong reasons, you know. A big thing too is about how the people treat the motivated seller, where they treat them like a number rather than a person, somebody going through something in their life. And then a lot of them too, a lot of the gurus, I hate to say the word guru, but a lot of the gurus, they make the business like you have unlimited funds to just go out there and attack a certain thing. Mm-hmm. And it's not practical. Most people that are starting, there's bootstrapping. So the book is for the seasoned investor because I give you some practical lessons on, you know, how to answer the calls, how to go to an appointment, tricks that I've learned, maybe not tricks is a good word, but things that I've learned that, like the verbiage of how you answer a call. If you answer the call in the wrong way, you can have a higher closing ratio or a lower closing ratio, mm-hmm. you know? And so I kick over some sacred cows in the industry and it's fun along the way. I give some insight into some stories, some crazy stories that you've been in. And if you've been in the business for a while, who knows what you're walking into a motivated seller's house, you know, you can walk into some crazy stuff. So I walked into some crazy stuff and I put some of the stories in there.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I love it. I definitely want to go through some of the parts of the book. And one thing I want to unpack before we kind of move on to too much is man, you mentioned early on in the book, let me go find it, man. Something about let your core values guide. Let me find the exact words here. Let your values be your guide. And also you mentioned, you know, when you're working with the seller that they're going through a situation. And I think a lot of investors oftentimes look at it as the transaction. I'm doing the next transaction. And I was in the room of a really, really high level, the highest level house flipping and wholesaling mastermind in the country. Amazing mastermind. I mean, like so, so good. And I don't want what I'm about to say to be a reflection on the mastermind because it's not. It's a reflection on the approach that investors, flippers, wholesalers in general take because it's just what people do. And I had everyone, I said, hey, raise your hand if you would actually love to sit down and have a beer with your average client. And in my room, there were about 30 people there. And these are people who were doing 300 deals a year, you know, 75, 200. One guy does 600 a year. Chris Clothier from Memphis Invest. And when I had people raise their hands, there were literally only like two or three of us that raised our hands that we would love to have a beer with our client. And the reason I brought that up is like, man, business should be insanely fun. It should be fulfilling and you should really love your client. Cause if you don't, man, it's hard to be genuine about your marketing. It's hard to be genuine about things. So as you're going through, you talk about how you do that in your book. Dude, what ways do you see that you do things differently versus the average investor who would not raise their hand that, yeah, I would actually sit down and have a beer with my client and enjoy it?
The number one thing I would say is transparency. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the industry, and I'll tell you the story how it happened. I was at an appointment. I had just walked out of a motivated seller deal with the seller, and I was in my car, and I just – somewhat got overcome with, for lack of a better word, guilt. And, you know, I think it was God, but who knows what it is. And I said, and I felt like this word, and it said, unequal weights are an abomination. So the idea came in that I was going in there as the expert. I knew what market value was, and I knew what the repair costs were. But I was fudging both numbers to make the deal happen on my side. So I was lying, in a sense. So I was telling myself, oh, your house is only worth this when it was actually worth X. And so, in a sense, I was going around with unequal weights. Unequal weights is an old term for like exchanging money. So you have a weight. This is like 1 ounce, and you have to put the 1 ounce of gold, unequal weights.
Gotcha.
And so from then on, I created a different way of presenting an offer. And all I really do is I justify how I got to the number, and I show them exactly how much I would make if I bought and sold it. And it's an estimate. Who knows? You know, when if you're a flipper, you never really know. The market is fickle. But that's what I do, is I show them, hey, here's your market share. Here's what it's cost, the closing costs, realtors, your repair costs, and this is what you would sell if you sold it yourself. And then if you add me on top, I have to do the same that you do. I have to close, I have holding costs, and I have to make a profit. And here it is. And it kind of goes back to me and you, what we're talking about, Colby.
Yep.
Is I simplify. That's a strength that I have, in a sense. I'm a low fact finder, so I simplify. Everybody's going to be like, what the heck is this talking about?
All these secret codes we're talking about.
That's so weird. You know, I think I was a 2 or 3 on my fact finder. So you guys are going to go research it and have no idea what it is, but yeah, You'll love it when you find it. So I took a very complex thing and I made it simple. I actually created an app. I showed it to you. And it's a presenter app. So you literally can use it with your smartphone or your Android to present the offer to the seller. And all you have to do is input the value and the repair cost, and it'll spit it out for you. So,
dude, that's so cool. So I want to make sure people really heard that and understand what we're talking about here. So Edward mentioned transparency, right? And one thing when you look at, as an example, let's look at this example that I get brought to me multiple times a week, which is opendoor.com, right? It's a Silicon Valley venture-backed company backed by hundreds of millions of dollars. They're going out there buying thousands of homes in Phoenix and wherever else that they're at. And they're buying a lot of houses. So they're taking a lot of business away from house buyers in the business right now. But when people look at it, they come to me going, man, you know, it's all because of this pretty website that they have. Now, we have tested the heck out of, you know, emulations of their websites. And we found some of them worked as good. Some of them worked a little bit better. In some markets, it worked way worse than the carrot site. So it really depends on market demographics and psychographics. The site design is more based on the brand that they wanted to put out there versus this looks pretty, therefore it converts well. And the thing is, one of the big reasons why it's working so well is their transparency. It's crazy easy to tell exactly how much you're going to pay Opendoor and what they're going to make, because you can go on their thing and it says we decide on a fair market value, and then you pay us 6%, and then we'll let you know if there's any repairs, and then the repairs are on top of that. Done. It's easy as heck to see. Okay, well, it's transparent process. I can understand how it is that he came up with this number instead of Edward pulling a number out of thin air and them going, oh boy, is this a low number? It doesn't make sense to me. How did he come up with it? So as soon as you started doing that, what changed in your business, or what changed in you? Did you have any mental mindset shifts that made you enjoy your work more? Did it convert more deals?
Yeah. So one thing I do very different than anybody else is I don't negotiate deals on the phone. And everybody, probably people are going to fall out of their chair like, what? I don't negotiate deals on the phone. They call me or I call them, and I find out, okay, are you living in the property and why are you selling? And then I set the appointment and that's it. If the motivation's there, I'll go swing the bat. So my closing ratio from deals is 20 to 25% regularly from a lead. So if it's able to close, you know, and a lot of people they get all the CRMs up front, but they don't care after they contacted the seller. They just, in a sense, to me, they're just kind of throwing, you know, the spaghetti on the wall and just seeing what sticks. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's where the real deal breaks down. So my closing ratio is better. So you're going to spend more in marketing. You're going to spend more in this, and I'm going to get more deals. Mm-hmm. So the other thing that helped, that changed, is when I go to the seller, it's not combative because we don't already have a number. Yeah. So, and they don't have that number stuck in their head. Mm-hmm. So, like, say, well, what's the lowest you would take? That's the number one question every investor asks. Yeah. What's the number one number you'll take? What's the lowest number you'll take if you got an offer today? You know, and then you get 60 or 70 or 100, whatever the number is. So when you get there, now you got to take them from 100 to 60. Mm-hmm. That's a fight. But if you don't have a number and you write it out, you're giving the first number. Say, hey, I'm 60. Now they got to bring you back up. Mm. So negotiations is different.
That's
so
really good there, man, because you will hear oftentimes that the person in negotiations that, you know, that shows their cards first loses. And mm-hmm. in this case, let's kind of break down the psychology there, because this is really important. And I want people to understand why this is so important, because I think a lot of people focus so much of their marketing on the sexiness of how many leads I'm getting, like you mentioned, versus where are those points in the process between getting a lead and closing a deal where a deal could fall apart? It's within minutes after the lead. Am I following up right? It's between the time that you set an appointment and show up. What can I do there to make that better? It's when you show up and make an offer. You know, how many of those are closing versus not? So you've really optimized in a couple spots that most people aren't, which is sweet. So looking at the psychology there, if you're asking a seller what's the lowest you'll take and they'll tell you, like you're mentioning, automatically you're almost forcing them to admit that they were being untruthful at the start, or that they didn't know what they were talking about.
They have to change their mind.
Yeah.
They have to change their mind. And it's hard to change somebody's mind, mm-hmm. you know. So it's I'll give you one quick thing. So it's like they call and I'm like, I'll tell you on the thing. I have the whole script on here, and it's like, quick sell buyers, how can I help you? This quick sell buyers.
Sweet.
Quick sell buyers, how can I help you? And they're like, yeah, I saw your ad, or I clicked on your website, or I got this in the mail, or something left this thing on the door. And I'll say, great. So you want to sell your house? Yes. Okay. Well, the process is, or they generally ask, what's the process? The process is, we go to your house, we assess the condition, and we make you a cash offer. And so when can we set an appointment? I go directly to a close, mm-hmm. just entirely different than anybody else does, because they're calling you to sell their house and they want an appointment, obviously, so you can see it. Mm-hmm. So there's no objection. You're like, okay, great. I'll do what you want. Yeah. Then after that, I ask them prodding questions, but I already have the appointment.
Gotcha.
If you ask the prodding question first, you lose a lot of deals. They're like, oh, I'm going to think about it. I'm going to talk to my wife, or I'm going to talk to my husband. Mm-hmm. So you lose them after that. So from the point when you're talking to that person on the phone, you want to get that appointment. Mm-hmm. They, you can always back out of an appointment, but you don't want them to.
Yep.
So the main thing I ask is, why are you selling? If their motivation's there and they have the equity, I'll go. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's all I really want to know. But if the motivation is not there, like they say, oh, I want to buy a new house, or I'm moving. Moving's not as much motivation as a lot of people would think. But if they're like, I'm going through a divorce, that's good motivation. Or I'm 5 months behind on my payments, or I inherited this house from my uncle. Mm-hmm. Those are good motivations. So you're like, great, let's go. So then you go to the house, you walk through it, and it's not combative. Mm-hmm. You're not going into a fight. I'll tell you one thing. I get houses below price that another investor offers just because they say, I didn't trust him. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I didn't trust him. He just came off cheesy, because they come in, and that's the other thing I talk a lot about in my book, the arrogance of the real estate investor.
Yep.
And he's always trying to show off his knowledge. He's always trying to act holier than thou art, you know, and he's walking around like, oh, well, you know, we have to take out this whole kitchen. This kitchen is disgusting. And you're talking to somebody's house. You're in their house.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. It's almost unsafe to talk like that about somebody's house while you're walking through their house. But most real estate investors are jerks, mm-hmm. you know? So why walk through a house? I don't really say, oh, I would have to do this unless they ask me. Mm-hmm. I just kind of, I have a little clipboard and I walk around and I just kind of take note while I'm doing it. But I give them the self-respect not to be like, hey, you know, this paint is really bad or whatever, just to beat up the seller more.
Yeah.
Give them some respect. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So those are some of the things I go over.
Dude, that's so good. And I'm glad we're going down this path, because this is one of the ways we built our company, right? Where we could have totally done the hammer you over the head with a sales pitch and hitting on emotion so much in that sales pitch. But we don't, and we grew slow at the start, but then it picked up momentum and we're the largest in our industry now, in this little niche of an industry, but we're the largest in this industry now by quite a margin in what we do specifically. And it's because we went out there to really truly understand the person, have empathy for where they are, provide a great solution, be real with them, and then also show your core values. And you mentioned that in your book, like I said, I think it's on page 6, Let Your Values Be Your Guide. And you dive into that even more on what that means for you and kind of this conversation that we've been talking about. So, dude, I love it. The whole thing is you always hear nice guys finish last, right? And I've never followed that model. Yeah, I think people have always called me a pretty nice guy, and I've done decently well for myself. And it seems like with you too, man. That's the same philosophy.
You know, at the end of the day, you know, there's a saying that says don't curse a deaf man. Mm. I don't know if you've ever heard that. Mm. So the idea behind it is, obviously, the deaf man, he's not you're not doing anything to him because he can't hear you.
Yeah.
It's what you're doing to yourself. Mm. You know what I mean? So ironically, you go around and you're taking advantage of, you know, grandma that, you know, lost her husband, or, you know, the mom that her husband died in a car accident, because that's what we deal with. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't ever talk about it. But, you know, I see it somewhat like a calling when I go to these people's house, and I'm the one that's, I don't want to beat them up or tear them down. I want to take care of them during this horrible season in their life that they'll probably only go through once. And I wouldn't want to do that, because think of what it's going to do to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to sleep at night. That's probably why all the investors are jerks, because they're just going around screwing people, and then they're screwing their soul up, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I want to be happy when I go home. I want to, like, my kids to like me, you know, like dogs not to run away from me because I'm so evil, you know.
Dude, so I want to flip it around a little bit. So we've talked a lot about some of the negatives that some people will approach, but of course, there's such a great part to this business. I mean, and people who do it right, like you said, are really, really solving a real problem. They're really going out there providing a real solution and doing it in a way that provides true value. And something you can look at your wife, your grandma, yourself in the mirror and go, you know what? I'm really proud of what I'm doing. This is sweet. Do you have any kind of favorite stories that pop in your mind of some of those sellers that you're just like, man, you gave yourself a mental high five, not because you made a huge profit on that one, but because, man, that was so sweet being able to help that seller.
Yeah. There's one, it's at the end of the book. Mm-hmm. And it's something that always rings with me, because I wasn't working for myself. I was working for another company here in town. I worked for, partnered and worked with 3 different companies. And if that company would have known, they probably would have, you know, chewed me out. But this lady, she inherited a house from her husband that passed away. She had never done anything with paying bills. She was just a homemaker. Mm. She didn't even know how to write a check. Mm. And she called me. She was behind like 5 months on her payment since her husband passed. She didn't know how to pay the bill.
Oh, wow.
And so she tried, she wrote a check out and mailed it to the bank. and the bank kept mailing it back to her. But so she just comes into my office and she's crying and she's like, Mr. Beck, just give me $5,000 and I'll give you my house. And I was like, whoa, wait. And I had already seen it, and she came in and I said, well, how much do you owe on it? And she's like, oh, I only owe like $15,000. The house was worth 120.
Yeah.
And it needed $5,000 in repairs. And I was like, why? She's like, the bank's going to take it. They just want to take my house. They won't take my money.
Yeah.
And so I looked at it up, and she was in foreclosure. So if you're in foreclosure and you send the incorrect number to the penny, they won't receive it and they'll mail it back to you. Right. And I said, it was at that moment, that crossroads, you know, in your life where you're like, I could totally screw this lady over for $5,000, get the house for 20 and make like $80,000 on a flip. Mm-hmm. And I said, ma'am, come on. And we got in my car. We drove across the street to Wells Fargo because that's where her bank was. Mm-hmm. And we went and talked to one of the customer service persons, and we caught up her payments right there on the spot.
That's sweet.
And for like the next 5 years, she would send me the Christmas card, and she sent make me like cookies, and she'd bring it to the office and stuff. And she was crying. But any other guy in my area would probably have just ripped that poor lady off. And I did it, man. And I'm happy I did. I would do it again. Yep. You know.
Dude, I love it. So I want to kind of dig into some of the things that you're doing in your business, right? In our last episode of the Carrot Cast, you talked about your story on using door hangers and door knockers and this and that. We had some awesome stories there. So check out the last episode of the Carrot Cast with Edward, where he walks through his story from start to where he was in that point. You can hear how he started, how he got his first deals done, some of the pain points he's gone through, what's working well in marketing. So in this market that's really competitive, you know, on our last episode, you were starting to invest more and more into online, and your website was getting ranked well. You're getting some leads coming in that was pretty good, and consistently you're closing deals online. So what's your business marketing mix look like right now as far as online, offline, and what's working great for you?
We do PPC. I have two websites. Mm-hmm. Well, three websites. I have three Carrot websites, two Motivated Seller websites in my local. They're both ranking first and second in my city. Cool. And then we do the PPC pretty much on every major thing. We do door hangers. We probably do 15,000 a month door hangers, just subdivisions. We do mail. We do what else? We do Facebook. Facebook more for branding. I haven't figured out a way to really convert leads off of Facebook yet, but I am doing branding, which I get like referrals, which is, it's a different kind of lead. Yep. And they call like, hey, what about this? Or hey, what about that? And what else are we doing? We do some signs. And then I also get a lot of referrals and repeats. Mm-hmm. Referrals from other agents, other investors, things like that. So, yeah, we're all over the place. We're doing everything. The signs in our area, we have to do A-frames. We can't do regular stake in the ground anymore. The city stopped it. There was a point where there was like 15 people on each corner, every major thoroughfare. There's like 15 different signs on the corner, and then you would go and steal all their signs, and then they'd steal yours. And you know, I'm glad I'm not depending on signs anymore, because it was crazy.
Yeah.
The sign wars, like, yeah, it is a real thing.
Dude, so on the online side, you mentioned you've got a couple sites that are seller sites that are both ranking for the same keyword phrases. Kind of talk about the psychology and strategy behind that, because some other people might be going, well, I heard him say that he's got two sites ranking number one and number two. What's your reasoning there so other people can understand the strategy?
Well, one of my favorite sayings is this. It's a horrible saying, but it's funny. And it says, I'm not competitive. I just want to do better than you.
Uh-huh. And I love it.
But, I'm a competitive guy. I want to outrank other people. And if I can get two spots on one and two, then why not? And, but it really started with Adrian. and Adrian, your buddy, the guy that works at Carrot, and, yep. and he did some SEO for Texas El Paso. So I had Texas El Paso, just the URL, no website. And then I had quick sell buyers that I had ranked already on page one. Mm-hmm. It was ranking, but it wasn't getting me leads. And then I said, when I talked to Adrian, I said, I'll give you this URL and I'll pay you. And if you can outrank it, then I'll give you both. Mm-hmm. So that's how it happened.
So that's how you made the switch from what you were doing before to over to Carrot.
Right? Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So Adrian proved himself, you know, more than proved himself. So we went ahead and gave him both, and, you know, and he's been a blessing ever since I met him. So good guy. I love Adrian. Yeah.
Dude, I'm so excited for you to come out. So depending on the time that you guys are listening to this episode of the Carrot Cast, this will be published before our first official Carrot Camp happens in October 9th and 10th, 2017. So depending on when you're listening to this, doesn't matter. Go to carrotcamp.com. We're likely going to do some other ones in the future. But Edward's going to be out here. Adrian's going to be out here. Some other really awesome investors. A lot of our Carrot team. One of my greatest mentors is going to be here. Seth, who I've had on the podcast. And it's going to be a great time, dude. So it's going to be fun, us three, you, me, and Adrian, getting to sit down and strategize and talk. And yeah, it's going to be a blast. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
For sure. So a couple things, dude. And then I want to kind of just really honestly drive people to the book. So we've already talked a lot about in the previous episode some of the models that you were using. And you're doing PPC right now. And you're doing SEO. And one thing we haven't mentioned here is kind of scale of your business, where in the last episode with you, we talked about how you went through the original upswing in 2005, four, five, six, had a big business with your family. And then, like many people, the business, it went down. You know, I mean, you guys had some hard times. And then you're like, man, here's ways that I am going to, if I do this again or when I do this again, I'm going to restructure my business so it's this way.
Yeah.
And let's kind of cliff notes that, because like I said, we talked about the full version of it in the other episode with you. Go find that in iTunes, y'all. Go find it with Edward, or go find it on carrotcast.com. But kind of how was that decision for you to downscale and really focus on lifestyle and being happier with your business? And how is it working today?
I can't take 100% of the credit, because when my dad's business collapsed, I went out on my own. And then one of the other competitors in town that he picked me up, and I started working for him. And I learned a lot from him. He was kind of like the seminar junkie. You know what I mean? You know the guy. Yep. Everybody knows that guy. He's like, he knows everything, all the new techniques. He could tell you all the different legal stuff. He's definitely a fact finder, mm-hmm. you know, and everybody's going to be like, what are they talking about? and then we're going to have to do one just on that. And then I got hired on by a guy that I was wholesaling to. So I had wholesaled him 5 deals in a month from this other company, but I did everything. I find it, and they sold it to him, and he was like, well, why don't you come work for me? Mm-hmm. Made me a better deal, gave me partnership. So I went in and worked for this guy, but he was a buy and hold guy. Mm-hmm. And I got to see from the start, and then I got to see at the end of his career, where he was kind of at the tail end of his career, and he had the life I really wanted. Mm-hmm. You know, the buy and hold guy. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the buy and flip guy who I was working for that had the life I wanted, because he was still on the grind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He still had to make that deal that next month to satisfy his lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But this guy, the buy and hold guy, you know, all he talked about was going to the beach next month, you know, and he didn't care about anything. You know, he had, I think 150 properties, and the average LTV was like 30%. And they were all rented, and he had a property management company that managed them all. And he had 2 people that worked for him. And that was it. Like, think about the stress level, right? So I worked for him for a while. And then I got like another guy said, hey, you know, let's make a deal together. So I've been like a little bit of a, I don't know. I've been around with the partnership wise, but I learned a lot. I looked at it more of a learning experience, where I got to kind of see what worked for them and what didn't. Almost like with my parents, you see what worked in their life and what didn't, and you want to take the good and leave the bad. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot from that. But that was where I kind of said, man, this business model is different. And then all the teachings of Kiyosaki, I read a lot of his books, and Kiyosaki talks a lot about you don't buy for capital gains, you buy for cash flow. And so I changed my model to be where it's smaller, but it's more based. The purpose is not to buy and wholesale or to buy and flip. The purpose is to acquire cash flowing assets. Mm-hmm. And if you can get enough cash flowing assets, then you can, in a sense, get out of the rat race. Mm-hmm. And that's where it all kind of started from, is I saw it done in my market by somebody here, and I saw the lifestyle that I wanted, and I said, man, talk about ultimate security and no stress and still the ability to do what he wanted to do. Like I love this business. Mm. Even if I had a bajillion dollars, I would still want to go to Motivated Seller's house and talk to them, because I love it. I wouldn't do anything else, you know. Maybe not paperwork, but you know,
you'd have someone else do that. So to give people some context here on your current model, and I think this is so important, then we'll wrap it up with the book here in a minute. Dude, when I was first looking at doing real estate investing in college, you know, I kind of latched onto what everyone at that time, this would have been 2005, so right there in the middle of the upswing when I was a senior, and everyone's flipping, you know, so that was kind of the sexy thing. So that's what I started researching. But then the more that I started to dig in there and look at the model, I was the exact same way that you had became, where I'm like, man, I see my grandpa over here with a bunch of property, and see this person with a bunch of properties. I'm like, he doesn't seem like he's working, you know, but to go out there and have to churn deals all the time, that completely seemed like work. So then I shifted my own focus on real estate toward, I'm going to use it for long-term wealth and cash flow. And, you know, I've only wholesaled one property in my life. It was on accident, and never flipped a property. Not saying I won't, or there's no value there. It's you've always got to find a way. If you're going to buy cash flow properties, you've got to have cash coming in some way to then funnel into your purchases. Yeah. And for me, I chose to build businesses, funnel that cash into purchases. And for you, the business you're building is flipping real estate and wholesaling, funneling that cash into it. So if you don't mind sharing this stuff, and share whatever you want to share, don't share every word or whatever you're not comfortable, but what kind of volume are you doing right now on a monthly basis, let's say buying and selling houses, and what's your strategy on buying cash flow?
We probably do 8 to 15 a month. Uh-huh. And I have a part-time assistant.
Okay.
And I have a partner, and my partner owns a property management company. Mm-hmm. And he manages all the property management. So I kind of, in a sense, from use his analogy, is I go and kill and drag it in, and then he cuts it up and prepares it and makes it a meal. Yep. So, he's definitely the fact finder and follow through guy. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to keep doing that. But, in a sense, that's what it is. So I would say we pick maybe 2 to 3 to keep. Mm-hmm. We probably do 2 flips, and then the rest we wholesale. I would say that's the majority. So we wholesale quite a bit still, but I get to somewhat cherry pick. And then a lot of times too is I'll form partnerships, and I really love to do that with deals. So I'll have a new investor that doesn't know what they're doing, and if I wholesale them that house, they would lose money because they don't know what they're doing.
Yep.
And so I'll tell them, hey, I'll get it to you at the same price that I do. You front the money, and we'll work the deal together.
Gotcha.
And it's another thing coming from a place where I want to help people. I don't want to hurt somebody because I want them to keep coming back. Yep. So I have like 6 people that I do deals with, and we'll do flips or we'll do buy and holds or whatever. And we'll go buy it, and 99% of the time they're put in front most of the money, whatever they have. So like, say they have 50 grand, and I had one last month, the deal costed 50 grand, but it needed like 20 in repairs. Mm-hmm. So we fronted the 20, we did the repairs, and then he fronted the 50, no overhead, no holding cost. Everybody makes good money. You know, we make, on the buy and sell, we're going to make probably 15 and he's going to make 15. So you slice the pie a little less, but the risk is less as well.
Gotcha.
So, because flipping is risky. It's a risky business. Anybody that tells you not, they're trying to sell you a product. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, flipping is risky. The way I equate flipping is kind of like speculation on the stock market. And he's like, hey, I got this hot lead. You know, Apple's going to go up. Like, that's how I equate flipping. And if you don't know what you're doing with stocks, you know, I wouldn't buy and sell stocks. You know, you buy and hold.
Yep.
It's safer. So that's the same thing I look at real estate. Like, you get into buying and selling flips, but you don't have any idea what the market is or what it'll really take to repair it. You're flipping stocks. Might as well go over there. You know, it's, but that's why I think the risk reward is really high in flipping. Mm-hmm. You can make 500 times your money cash on cash, you know, and you can't make that in the stock market, but the risk is there as well.
Yep.
So to get in with this misconception that there's no risk in flipping, I think is another thing. Another reason I wrote the book.
Yeah. So dude, let's make that transition right now. Cause like I said, I mean, one thing I love about the convo with you and several others too, Jack Bosch, a good friend of mine, he's in Phoenix, podcast episode with him is he's really about creating a business that kicks off cash flow so he can buy cash flowing real estate, which creates his wealth wheel, he calls it. And it just continually, perpetually creates his wealth wheel. So he has that freedom, right? He can step away. He's got a business that's built and he's got the cash flow coming over here that's he's set for life. He just works because he wants to now and travels all over the world with his family. And then you also have people we've had in the Carrot Cast where they're flipping 200 houses a year. They're flipping 500 houses a year. And sweet, you know, it's like, look at what you resonate with and don't look at the sexiness of the volume of the transaction. Look at what's at the end. Look at what is the business and lifestyle that they're building with this business model. And does that fit what I want? And that's the cool thing about you is you've been through pretty much every model that there is with real estate investing. And at this phase in your life, anyway, you're settling on create cash flow with my flipping and wholesaling and pile mm-hmm. that into or pile a portion of that into cash flowing real estate. It's just such a good model.
Yeah, no, I really love it. And don't get me wrong, like anybody that, especially flipping 200 deals, you got to have some crazy system set up, you know, because you're not going to be able to touch all those houses. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely, you know, taking it to the next level. I would say the average guy maybe flips, what, like 5 deals a year, you know? Was that what you say? So yeah. To me, that's the guy who's like, he's got grandma's retirement. This is the average investor I meet. And he's like, hey, I inherited $100,000 and I want to get into flipping. And I was like, and I used to just wholesale him a deal. Like I had another friend who he borrowed money from some guy at church and he wanted to get in the business. He saw me and how I was living and I could go to Starbucks all day, you know. That's the pinnacle of life, right? Is to be at Starbucks.
Yeah, that's right.
But and so he bought a wholesale deal for me. He didn't fix it right. And he put Chad Rock landscaping in the front and he didn't paint it with the right colors and it just never sold. He lost his personal house, right? And this guy's money, you know, and I don't want to do that to people. And you know, I wouldn't want that guy to go through that. So in the future, that's kind of why I changed it. I'm like, well, if you're a savvy investor, like, okay, good. Like, I'm not even going to tell you what market value is. You figure it out. I'm not going to tell you what repairs cost are. You figure it out, you know. But if you're some green pea coming from the street, you know, I'm going to say, hey, why don't we just do this deal together? You get a discount so you don't have to pay the wholesale fee. You're going to make less at the end of the day, but you're going to be more secure.
Yep. Yeah, I love it. So I'm going to buzz through some of the chapters here. And I guess while I'm saying this, at the time we're recording, I can't remember, dude, when is the book coming out?
It'll probably be late this month, September, okay, or early October.
Sweet. So by the time you guys listen to this, the book will either be out or will just be coming out if you listen to this right when it's published. And like I said, the name of the book is Get Rich But Not Quick by Edward Beck, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly Real Estate Investment. And he goes all the way from, you know, talking about his journey, his secret sauce, really injecting how he's built his business around core values. And then it goes into the meat, like where it's, here's how I find the house, my marketing, here's what happens in direct mail and with the web and door hangers and things like that. And then it goes into a bunch of other stuff. Here's exactly what you say to a seller when you're on the call. Here's the questions to ask them. Here's things to do when you're on the call. Here's what you're doing when you're setting up your appointments. And you give so many examples of their motivation and things to say. I mean, it's really kind of a point by numbers book that anyone can just go through and go, okay, that one tip right there can help me close my gap and increase my close ratio. That one tip right there by asking that question builds more trust with that seller. And then it just goes on and on. What you do on your walkthroughs with your sellers, how you meet with them, how you speak with them, how to make sure you're looking for hidden problems and things like that that, mm-hmm. that might come up, how you make your offers. And I can keep going, like I said, but it's going to take you from all the way from the mindset and how to really root your business in core values. So you're building a business you're proud of and one that you enjoy, all the way through the close and how you sell it and dispose of that property. Anything that I miss as far as highlights, dude, that you're like, man, this right here, if someone picks up the book, this one thing or these two things alone are worth it if they just read these passages.
You know, signing contracts, there's a fear from new investors, because I work a lot with new investors when you're wholesaling. Yep. So there's a fear when you're at somebody's house and you're sitting across from somebody and you haven't signed contracts before. And there's a fear of how to do it. So signing contracts is huge. Mm-hmm. I also have a small little section is about what's your EQ.
Yep.
You know, so I talk a little bit about your emotional intelligence. You know, how to win friends and influence people, 7 habits, you know, different things like that. Those kind of things, like you talked about it in the beginning, where it's like begin with the end in mind. Mm. You know what I mean? So the idea of like, hey, what are your goal in life? Is it you just want to make money today so you can drive a Porsche? Or do you really want to get to a point where in your life where you have a life that you love, mm-hmm. and you like waking up in the morning and you like looking in the mirror, you yeah. know? Yeah. Like, that's the real goal. I don't care about how many zeros I have in my bank account. Like, I want to wake up in the morning and I want my wife to like me and I want my kids to be proud that I'm their dad. And I want to look in the mirror and not feel ashamed. And I want to, you know, not be stressed out about money. That's mm-hmm. it. You know what I mean? Like, what else is there, you know? So, I don't know, people forget, they get so obsessed with money,
yeah.
and, you know, money is deceptive, you know, there's trappings of money, but, money's a tool, so you can use it or it can use you.
Dude, I kind of want to wrap our combo with this right here. I mean, first of all, where can people find your book? I'm sure it's going to be on Amazon, but do you have a website set up for the book?
It's Godspeed Investors. Godspeedinvestors.com. Cool. And that's where you can buy it at, for sure. Sweet. And then Amazon. Amazon's the number one place, you mm-hmm. know.
So head over to Amazon sometime late September, early October, or if you're listening to this afterwards, head over to Amazon and find Edward's book, Edward Beck, last name B-E-C-K, and Get Rich But Not Quick. Look for that book, buy it. It's, what is it going to be, $15-$20? So it's like some of the best investments you can make is in books, guys and gals.
I think it's $13.
Perfect, $13. Man. So the thing that you mentioned there, you know, towards the end was you can use money or money can use you. And dude, I want to end with this because we've had you on 2 episodes. You've talked about your journey in real estate. You've talked about the good and the bad that you've experienced. The book dives into it in more detail. You're a Carrot client. We've helped you kind of optimize some things there, and I'm really excited to see what the next year looks like with you, man. I'm so pumped that you're a client of ours. But on the you can use money or money can use you, is there anything that you do or you'd suggest that people do to sit down and figure out, okay, how do I make sure that I'm intentional with the business I'm building? So I'm building it to truly serve me instead of to be something that I'm going to continually grind away at and never be comfortable or thankful or never going to stop. Is there something you do, like you write down your freedom number, like some people say, or anything like that? Or I would say,
you know, a lot of people have goals, but I think it deeper is your why. Mm-hmm. Why do you want it? you know, what's the, like, yeah, you know, you can have the nice house, the Ferrari, and the, you know, the bunch of zeros in your bank account, but why? You know, I know a lot of super successful people, and I started asking questions because most of them are depressed.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like horrible people, and like, I wouldn't want to have a beer with them. We had that conversation, mm-hmm. right? I wouldn't want to have a beer with them to save my life because they're just going to infect me with their horrible life. Mm-hmm. And so I would say you got to understand your why first. And then aside from that, one practical way is, and it comes from that, the richest man in Babylon. So the idea is 10% you put away and you save, mm-hmm. right? And then I add 10% you put away and you give to charity, mm-hmm. or to your church. And then you live off of 80, yep. right? Yep. And you build your future off of 80. And then you put aside the 10 and you put aside the other thing and you give back. You know, I think, you know, there's a saying that says that it's better to give than to receive. And there's a lot of truth to that, you know. One thing I do here in town too is when I go to a motivated seller's house and they don't have like utilities on or food, like I'll take them to the store.
That's cool.
You know what I mean? And if I get the deal, if I don't, I don't really care, but talk about a blessing. Like, and the lady, she, like, I'm walking through the supermarket with the shopping cart and just putting food in there. And the lady, she doesn't know what to do. She's like, you know, but they're human beings. You know what I mean? These are your fellow Americans. These are like your neighbors. And if you're there with it and you don't give it to them, like, you know, so I don't know. I think those are some of the reasons why. It's just you kind of get outside of your own selfish desires and you focus on just helping people. And it's not a charity. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm very, you know, Ayn Rand-ish, you know, that, you know, that is capitalistic. But if I do it on my terms, you know what I mean? Don't force me to give, but I'm going to give on my terms.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the things I would say.
Dude, I love it. I love it. And that wraps in perfectly with an episode of the Carrot Cast a couple times ago where I run through kind of my seven triggers or steps that I had to kind of go through in my life to be where I am today. And one of them, number two, was be a go-giver. And that had to happen early on in my journey to really set me off and where I am. And it's just a good reminder, man. I'm so glad you brought that up. So, Edward, dude, thanks for joining me again. Everyone head over to GodspeedInvestors.com or to Amazon and buy his book. I think you're going to really, really love it no matter what level of investor you are. And reach out to Edward. I mean, he's a dude who's going out there closing a lot of deals, a great guy. And if there's any way that I can help you out, Edward, let me know. And I will see you in a little less than a month up here at Carrot HQ at Carrot Camp. So pumped about that, dude, and appreciate your time here again.
Thank you, guys.
Awesome. Thanks, guys and gals. Have an amazing rest of the week. Head over to those resources. Check out Edward's book. And if you're interested in Carrot Camp, on the next go-around, go to carrotcamp.com and see if we have any others scheduled. If we don't, keep on checking back, because we likely will sometime for the next year. It's something new, and it's something that we're excited to see and hone and invite more Carrot customers to Carrot HQ out here in Oregon, just like Edward. So have an amazing week. Please put something into play that Edward talked about today. And I think the easiest thing we could all do is go out there and find something this week to give. Your time, your money, something that hits you at your core. Give to someone else and get in that practice, because it's going to come back to you in spades. Thanks. Have an amazing rest of the week. We'll talk soon.